good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to our interview series and episode number 256. We are going to talk to Mr. Dave Slifer, the head women's basketball coach at Central Missouri State. Coach has won everywhere that he has been. Mount Mercy at the NAIA level, to Missouri Western, to Central Missouri State. Just a terrific coach, a veteran coach, seasoned and experienced is what we say here on A Pen and a Napkin, coach. We don't use the O word. It's seasoned and experienced. So, but before we bring on Coach Slifer, we want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic, located at 144th and Maple here in Omaha. Coaches, if you or your athletes are struggling with balanced neck or spinal issues, go see Dr. Kevin or Dr. Heidi. Just be sure to let them know that A Pen and a Napkin sent you. Follow us on Twitter at A Pen and a Napkin. We try to put out daily coaching tidbits on the Twitter handle, so be sure to follow us there. If you're listening, download, rate, review, subscribe, give us 5 stars here. That helps us move up in the rankings. Just say good things about A Pen and a Napkin, and that helps the podcast out for sure. And any questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Dave Slifer, head women's basketball coach at Central Missouri State. Coach Slifer, thanks so much for your time during this busy part of the season for you.
Hey, it's always a pleasure to talk hoops, and it's funny to get reacquainted with people. Apparently, we go back about 30 years, and I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, like I said, I think we had that one run, and I don't know if it was when Mike was the head coach. I'm pretty sure it was when Mike was the head coach, when you were at Mount Mercy, and it might have been at when you guys used to host that, or I think they still host it at Mount Mercy, that statewide all-star game sponsored by the Pepes Ranch or that type of thing. It might have been that weekend or something like that. But great to have Coach on here. Like I said, he's been successful everywhere that he's went. Coach, let's get this started the way that we normally do for folks that don't know about you, about your basketball journey. Tell us a little bit about your run in the game.
Well, I got my start of being on the women's side at Mount Mercy College. I was an assistant men's coach from 85 to 89. And it was actually the AD and head men's coach was my old junior college coach from Blackhawk East JUCO in Illinois, Kewanee, Illinois.
Okay.
And after he left Blackhawk East, he ended up getting the head job at Mount Mercy. I had played at Mount Mercy my last 2 years, and so had a chance to go back to the Mount and be an assistant men's coach. Also did a little baseball at that time, ran the new rec center. And so our women's coach left in August of 89, and he came into my office and goes, "You've got to try this. I think you would love it." My wife had just gotten the job at Linmar High School as the head girls coach. Mm-hmm. And we look back on it right now and are saying, how did we have 3 kids, no family, all our family was in Illinois, and she was the head coach at Linmar, I was the head coach at Mount Mercy. I'm not even sure how we did it.
Uh-huh.
But I think that there's a reason that young people have kids and not older people, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's just kind of one of those deals where you just kind of make it up as you go along, that's for sure.
No, it is. And we've had great friends in Cedar Rapids, and it's a great place. Loved our Iowa experience. But I ended up, my first year, we had 4 seniors at Mount Mercy, and thank goodness, because I was a 29-year-old who thought I knew everything, and fortunately they kind of corrected me, and we were 29-5 that first year, and our 5 losses, 4 of them were to the St. Ambrose Bees.
Yeah.
And Lisa Bluter was the head coach, the former Iowa coach.
Yep. And I think I know who their best player was too.
Their best player is in Missouri right now coaching.
Robin Pinchton. Yeah.
Pinchton. Robin Becker at that time.
Yep.
Who, incidentally, and I tell everybody this, That gal got away with more travels than any other player I have ever seen. And they beat us four times. And don't get me wrong, there was not really any close games. Mm-hmm. They were just that good. My only other loss that year of our group was to Briar Cliff and a gal by the name of Cindy Tudhope.
Yep.
And she got me that that time. A lot of my buddies on the men's side would kept calling me and going, hey, how does it feel to get beat by a woman? And I go, well, I haven't had a guy beat me yet. So I think women can coach a little bit.
Yep.
And so the next year we kind of turned the corner and beat St. Ambrose. Lisa had gone to Drake, and we ended up, this is a pretty good story because we got beat by him twice, at least twice. And the last time was about mid-February, and they beat us by 30. And we came back for the playoffs and beat them for our first run at a national tournament. Now, back then, there was not two divisions of NAI. It was just the single division. We played Jackson, Tennessee, is where we played it.
Yep.
And we did win a game, one game there, then got beat by a Tennessee team. This guy's name was David Cross, Belmont. They are now
Division I.
Yep. Yes. But they got us. And then we went Division II the next year. And I think 4 years in a row, we headed out to Oregon at Western Oregon State. The last 2 years, we got to the Final Four. And that last year, we had a bunch of seniors, kids that had been there 4 years. We ended up getting beat. And at that time, I was a Patino was at Kentucky, and I'd go down to all his clinics. And so we were a running, pressing, three-point shooting, fouling team. And we ended up, that's kind of funny because one of our players was a guard that couldn't score. And I'm serious. She could not score, but she hit her head in the first half. And they had a really good player. And the school's going to come to me in just a second here. They're a D2 school now. But they had a really good player. And my girl had Lynn Kleesner was her name. And she had held her in check. But she had concussion. And she couldn't play the second half. And I think we probably had an eight-point lead at halftime. We probably lost by 4 or 5 points. So it was... we thought we were going to get a national title there, and we did not.
Yeah.
And the reason I ended up getting an opportunity to go to Missouri Western, which is another school in our conference, the MIAA, Jeff Mitty was the coach of Missouri Western at the time. He is now at K-State doing wonderful things.
Mm-hmm.
And we were the two worst schedulers in the country. And so at the end of the summer, both of us needed two games. So he said, all right, you come down to our place and we'll come up to your place. Well, we were both ranked really high. He was Division II and we were NAI Division II. And I think at halftime at their place, we were up one and we got beat by two or three, but they, during Christmas, they had to come back to our place, and I think we beat them by 4 or 5. So I always tell Mitt, we may have been 1-1, but we won by more than you guys did.
You got the margin of victory there. So,
well, and they ended up going to the Final Four that year in D2 and had a great run, and again we did too. So it was really high level basketball, and it was two different they had. Scholarship players. I had Iowa Catholic girls that just played hard, and boy, did they play hard!
Yeah. So you went to Missouri Western, and you were there for about 6 or 7 years, and then you decided to make the move inside the conference. What precipitated that, Coach?
Well, I was actually there 9 years, and I think we had 10 teams in the league at that time. And I think I was the ninth paid coach. And so I, a buddy of mine had given me a call and said, "Hey, Sly, the Central Missouri job's open. Would you call for me?" And fortunately, I was smart enough that time to say, "Yeah, I'll call. But if they ask if I'm interested, I'm going to have to say that there's a real possibility I am." And again, our kids were all born in Iowa. We feel like they grew up in St. Joe, Missouri, and then they all graduated for, you know, high school here in Warrensburg and the UCM. So we've been lucky along the way to work in three great cities, good basketball cities. And whenever I talk to Missouri or to Central Missouri for my buddy, we talked for about 2 minutes, and finally the assistant AD said, "Hey, what's going to take to get you here, Sly?" And I said, "Well, let's start talking." And so we talked, and my daughter was going to be a junior in high school. And I, to be quite honest, she was not overly thrilled with the move. And as I tell her, as I give her a hard time about it to this day, I think she dated a kid here in Warrensburg who she knew I wouldn't like just because she was so mad at me. But she ended up marrying a Warrensburg kid who played football here, who they live up in Kansas City now. They gave me a couple grandkids, so that's good stuff. So, but it's interesting how it all happens. I don't think any of us really wanted to move, but it was bad times. So
we did it. What are some of the changes that you've seen in the game since you began, Coach? Just, you know, how has your job changed? And I'm guessing there might not be enough memory on my computer to go through everything, but, you know, what are the two or three biggest things that you've seen that have changed with your job and how you do your things here, compare, you know, from starting out at Mount Mercy to, you know, the 24-25 team at Central Missouri State?
Well, I think there's a few things going on, particularly right now, and I'll talk about the, you know, the portal and some of those things in a minute. I think the most exciting thing from 35 years ago when I first started doing this is that, hey, there is so many opportunities for young ladies to play basketball with AAU and tournaments all over the place. And right when I first started, there was some opportunity, but it has exploded now. And so these are kids that work at the game. You know, some of them who are single sport kids, it's 12 month years that they're, and so their skill level has gotten so much better, and they are so much more skilled. And I think that you've seen, you know, women's basketball just explode the last couple of years with Caitlin and a lot of the things that she did. But I had a senior women's administrator go to an NCAA conference about 5 years ago, and she came back and she just goes, "Dave, I don't think you guys all understand. This whole thing is going to change. The power shift is on. It's going to go from coaches to players, and you guys are going to have to figure out how to handle that." And I think that's probably the biggest single thing that's happened in the last 4 or 5 years is with the portal, with NIL, with the rules now where, you know, even in our conference, it used to be you had to sit a year if you traded schools within conference. And we finally, just last year, changed that rule. And right now you're seeing kids go to four different schools in 4 different years, or maybe even five with the COVID thing. And it's changed the balance of power, and it's not all bad. It's not all bad. It is different, though. It is different. And I think most of us who grew up in that area and started coaching, first off, Bob Knight was the king. And so that's the way you coached, and that's the way you're expected to act. And it's changed. And that's not necessarily bad. That's not always a bad thing. for change to happen.
Yeah. The evolution of it, and you know, you've had a heck of a run there at Central Missouri State. You've won a national championship. You've been to the NCAA tournament numerous times. You know, how much of the stuff that you see on ESPN.com or whatever with the NIL, with the transfer portal, how much has that slipped down to your level with the player movement? When you're recruiting kids at the Division II level, do you have to talk about NIL and that type of thing?
Well, it slipped in. I'll be honest. We've got a young lady on our team right now, and last year we had a kid get a little bit of NIL from a local car dealer. And this year, I don't think, you know, they can put their jerseys on. They can sell some stuff. So they have the opportunity to make some money there. Mm-hmm. But one of the kids we have on our team right now was, I passed up an opportunity for 2 years to make $50,000 at a school. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, since we've lost three games in a row right now, she's probably wondering, what did I do? And that's just part of coaching. You know what? It's no fun to lose, but we're a team that's got a lot of new kids. We lost a couple kids to the portal. One of them is at Creighton, mm-hmm. Cottrell. Mm-hmm. And she had another year. She played for us for 4 years. She scored over 2,000 points. And I'm happy for her, and I hope it goes well for her. She's coming off the bench right now, and she went to a great program who I've known Jim Flannery for a long, long, long time. Back when his days when he was the assistant coach at Lawrence College in Dubuque, and Connie Yorey was the head coach.
Yep, yeah.
We had another young lady transfer to Idaho and is a starter at Idaho. So it's hit our level. On the men's side, probably a little more NIL money. We're all eventually going to have just some sort of seed money to make sure that we get players.
Yep. You are a family of coaches. You are a basketball family, without a doubt, Coach. Your son is an assistant coach at Lynn University. But what's even more interesting is your wife has been your assistant for, 20-plus years. Normally, you come home and the team comes up at the dinner table. But when you ask your spouse how was their day at work, my wife talks about accounting at an architects and engineering firm. We're not rehashing the same reps in practice or the same film or anything like that. How do you guys make that work?
Well, there's a couple of things there. Number one is whenever we moved from. She was at Lindmar, I was at Mount Mercy, and we moved to Missouri Western. We'd had our third kid, and she said, you know what, Dave, I believe I'm just going to help you. And I'm telling you, that first year was very entertaining because there was a lot of, my philosophy is, and that came from her side, of course, not mine ever, but my philosophy is, anybody that knows me, I tell them that, it took me a couple of years to train her. And whenever I say that, they all laugh because they know that the training went the other way. My son ended up playing here. He is no longer at Lynn. He was there for a few years, and that's just part of coaching. That's just the way it works is you have to move around some, and presently he's job hunting. But he's also taken up his own little Instagram as the D2 Savant. And so he has an Instagram following, and he's just getting that started. He started about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and he has a game of the day, best game, what he thinks in Division II women's basketball is. And he's been around women's basketball so long, and it's always, he went to, when he was a little kid, that's how he learned to count was by twos and threes at the game, playing playing and watching basketball. So he went to Oregon with us, I think, all 4 years as just a youngster. And he loves the game and is trying to give back to it a little bit. And then, you know, Division II is not the easiest to follow. It sure is a lot easier now than it used to be with, you know, with our synergy with ESPN Plus. We've got our own MIAA network and we charge for it, but it's fantastic to be able to on an off day just pull up the Apple TV and watch MIAA play.
As we enter into this holiday season, coaches, you know what would make a great gift for you this year? It would be a copy of Kings of Their Court, the story of the 2020-2021 season here in Omaha, three ranked teams in the top 25 in the country. And you're going to hear the personal and professional stories of players like Hunter Salas and Chucky Hepburn, Frankie Fiddler, William Kyle, coaches like Tim Cannon, Josh Ludke, and Doug Woodard. Just a terrific, terrific story, a crazy time period in our country with quarantine, politics, George Floyd, and everything in between. Yours for only $19.99. Go to Amazon, go to books, look up Kings of Their Court, and order a copy of that today. It's going to be a great stocking stuffer for you, for somebody that you love. Tell your wife, tell your spouse, tell your kids, hey, I would love to have a copy of this book and have something to read here and to just read about a great basketball story. Kings of Their Court, available on Amazon.com today. Coach, you know, you were fortunate, just with somebody who is, as we say, seasoned and experienced. I wanted to get your perspective on this because you are in a unique situation for you, especially this offseason. You got a chance to sign a multi-year contract. And I think I read somewhere you'd said this is the first year I've ever had more than 1 year on my contract. And I've thought this for a while. You know, why isn't this more common with coaches at the, you know, even at the collegiate level and maybe, you know, at the high school level? I've never really understood if you've been a coach for X amount of time, I think that helps with some leverage that you can have when you're dealing with administration. You get, you know, parent this and that or the other thing, and you can kind of, okay, look, you can listen to this, but I signed a 3-year contract and this is year one. And if you want to get rid of me, you still, and again, for a high school coach, you're only talking, you know, $4,000 to $7,000, maybe if you're lucky on the high end of that, you know, but still, you know, I've never understood why we do things that way. And again, if somebody does something egregious, if they do something wrong, if it's morally wrong or whatever it may be, by all means, then certain things need to be addressed. And I'm not saying that there's not a cause or whatever. But I just feel like if we're going to ask so much of people, I feel like there can be more that we can do for coaches to feel more secure about their job security.
Well, I think that is a good point. And after we won the Natty in 2018, I went to my boss and I said, hey, I'd like a 3-year deal. And most of the coaches here at this time were only a 1-year deal. Now, I will admit, whenever I came here, Kim Anderson, who is a big name in Missouri and, you know, the brief run the NBA, but one of the top 25 players ever to play at Missouri. He was here and he was on a multi-year contract. So I told my boss, Jerry Hughes, I said, I'd like a multi-year contract. And they gave it to me for 3 years. And there was, you know, there was an option on it with, you know, we could fire you with cause, which makes sense. You know, yep. We all agree there. Yep. We do something wrong, but they could also fire me without cause and only pay 6 months. And the football coach had gotten the same thing as I'd got. And he came over to my office one day and said, I'm not going to sign that. That's a 6-month contract. So I ended up not signing that deal and just stayed with the 1 year contract. And I really thought that I'd end up coaching every year on a 1 year contract. But we've got a new AD now. Our AD, Jerry, after 40 years of being the AD, passed away a year and a half ago. Mm-hmm. And so our new guy was real hemp on making a commitment with a long-term deal. But I'm still not sure that it's not anything more than a six-month contract. So it gives great publicity to the school. I don't think it really does that much for us coaches in Division
II. Mm-hmm. You've done a great job, Coach. Just your teams have hit a good stride in February and March. You've made deep runs. Like you've won a national championship there at Central Missouri. Deep runs at Mount Mercy. Made the NCAA tournament at Missouri Western. You know, what do you feel like, and please don't be modest because we want to help other coaches out here. What do you feel like you look at? What are you able to do with those teams and with your teams on a consistent basis that gets them to be playing really, really good basketball in February and March? I mean, that's what we all want. But you know, what do you feel like are some things that you've been able to do and implement with your philosophy to make that happen for your teams more often than not?
Well, thank goodness we did win a natty in 2018. And then we got to the Final Four in 21. But we've had a lot of teams over the years that didn't win the region tournament when we probably should have. And so I was one of those frustrated coaches that, gosh, you know, we're playing pretty good ball right now, but we just haven't gotten over the hump. And that was kind of the deal at Missouri Western. We're there 9 years. We made eight regionals. And by last year there, we were, no, the 2003, we were number one in the country. And back then, there was only six teams that made the regionals. So the one and two got byes. And Southwest Oklahoma came in as probably a six seed. And they had lost two out of their last three. They had five seniors. We were really good, but we got upset, and I think that was probably the worst loss I have ever gone through because we were hosting the region, we were number one in the country, we were playing great basketball, so we were pretty frustrated with it. So, yeah, I appreciate you saying we always play great in February and March, but it took till finally 2018, which is. This is a good story because we were really good that year. And we, in our conference tournament, 12 teams make the conference tournament. Mm-hmm. We were the one seed, and so we had to play the winner of the 8-9. Well, the 9 seed ends up beating the 8, and we play Lindenwood in the, well, basically the quarterfinals. And we were... I'm telling you, we were good. We got beat that night. I mean, we just got beat. That's all there is to it. The other team, they ended up winning the conference tournament as the 9th seed. So they kind of underachieved throughout the year, but they were playing pretty well right then. So we decided, all right, this happened on a Thursday. We'll take Friday, Saturday off. We'll practice Sunday. I know I'll get a call Sunday morning. I still think we're going to host the region. And so Sunday morning, I get a call and said, hey, you guys are going to host. We know you got beat by the 9th seed, but your body of work is unbelievable. So I'm all excited about it, and now I'm ready to go to practice. And about an hour before practice, I get a call. The national committee's overturned this. The Elite Eight this year was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, and we've decided to have Augustana of Sioux Falls host the regional.
Oh, geez.
So my head was down. I came into practice. My head was down. And all of a sudden, the vibe in the gym, I get goosebumps just thinking about it. Our kids had just had 2 days off. They were fired up. I couldn't help but get my head up. And so we went to Augie, and we ended up Oh, we beat Moorhead, I think, first. Then we had to play Hayes, who's always a great game for us during our conference. And we beat them by 7 in a really good game. It was the closest game of our 6-game run. And we beat them. And Augustana ended up beating Northern State in overtime. And they had, the game was over. I mean, Northern State had the ball 5 seconds left. They advanced it, and they set up a play. And for some reason, and I've talked to Kurt Fredrickson, Freddie's what we call him, since then. That was his last game he ever coached. He retired. He coached for 40-some years, has got 1 million wins. And his kid threw the ball in the backcourt, and it was right to an Augie kid who got a layup to tie the game up, and they got beaten overtime. Augie was a little bit tired. We start the game off as a regional championship. We're up 19-2. I kept waiting for a run. We won by 39. And it was a blast. It was so much fun. So then we go to Elite Eight, and well, we have to play Lubbock Christian, who had won the two previous. And they had lost a few players, but they are a super solid program. And we beat them. We played Union. We beat them. So then we get to play Ashland. Ashland out of Ohio had won 73 straight games. They averaged 100.5 points per game. They are running, pressing. They could play. So my AD at the time, Jerry, was a big zone guy. He had been an assistant coach on the 84 Central Missouri Mules. The Mules and Jennies both won a national title in 84. And he was a big zone guy. So, of course, I start off man. And they go 6 for 6. And so I switched to zone. They make a step back three. So that are now 17 or 7 for 7. We're down 16-7. And I'm going, I'm not sure we're ever going to stop this bunch. And all of a sudden, that basket got very tiny for Ashland. And they could not make anything. Our zone was fantastic. They couldn't set up their press. And we ended up winning that game 66-52 on a team that had averaged 100.5 points per game. So for the year, they averaged 99 points a game.
And they jumped on you 16-7. So this is why I teach history and not math. So 59. Oh gosh, let's see. Yeah, 52, 52, 30.
35 points in the last 35 minutes of the game.
That's unbelievable.
It was spectacular. And the group we had was a wonderful, wonderful group. And I'm so happy for them. The 2 years before that, we had our only losing season, 2016. We were 11-18. We were not very good. And not only that, we weren't very good in the locker room. And I turned to my assistant at the time and said, "Coach Nick, we've got to get a better quality player." And we got two kids from Missouri, Morgan Fleming and Megan Skaggs, and they both started as freshmen. And 2 years later, we won a natty with them and would have won another one when they were seniors, but COVID hit. And we were hosting the region that year. I knew that the NCAA had a press conference right in the middle of our practice. And that was the practice where the NCAA, the NBA had already said, "We're canceling the season." And during our practice, we're warming up, we're getting ready, we're going through stuff, and all of a sudden, the score staples, Kathy Anderson was our SWA, and she just goes, "Sorry guys, the tournament's canceled." And that was such a weird time, frustrating time. And those poor kids didn't get to play another college game. And I'll admit that they were a little bit miffed whenever the kid that came in the next year got another year's eligibility.
And they should be. And they should be. So, Dave, what keeps you going? You've done this for 35 years. What keeps you going, man?
I love practice. I love games. And this is a guy that's lost three in a row right now and doesn't really have a clue. And I will admit, all right, here's our 2 week schedule we had.
I was just gonna say, you guys got a buzzsaw too, so.
Well, we had a chance to go to Hawaii, and it was an outfit that needed a four team, so they were gonna, you know, help us out, and we said, yeah, we'll take it. Well, you start going to Hawaii, if you want to leave Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, that ticket's about $400 or $500 more. So we decided, all right, we'll stay till Monday and we'll fly back. We got back in at midnight. Tuesday, I said, no, we're taking the day off. But Wednesday, we had to go 6 hours on a bus to Hayes, Kansas, who is one of the top two teams in our conference. And we were not very good. And that carried over to the next game at Kearney, and that's just life. Mm-hmm. And I love the lows and the highs. That's you gotta love to feel like you're the top of the world, and then on the next day you are humbled. As I tell everybody, basketball is a zero sum game. There is a winner and a loser every game, and it may just be a player too, or it may be a 20-point loss, and you have to learn from those. And that's where we're at right now. We're learning from it.
Mm-hmm. Coaches are absolutely loving our Taking Over a New Program booklet. As many of you know, I spent 2 years outside of coaching, and during that time, I hung a note card in my workspace at school that said, "Strip the house down to the studs." I took that time to really rethink and reorganize my thoughts on what it takes to run a transformational program. As I prepared for the possibility of coaching again, I organized these thoughts into this 96-page booklet. How much do I trust this booklet? I used this booklet as I went on interviews to help sell myself and my vision for what my new program would look like. If I'm using it to sell myself, why wouldn't I recommend it to you, my listeners? This booklet will help you look at any part of your program, no matter what stage you're at in your program, and help improve it in some way. It's all yours for only $15, which includes shipping and handling. For more information, email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com. Coach, at this time, we're going to pivot a little bit, and every week we have a John Wooden quote of the day. I'm gonna read you a quote from Wooden's book, A Lifetime of Observations, and I'll give you a chance to pontificate a bit on it a little bit here, to think about it, and then just kind of tell us what you think here. So how's that sound, Dave?
That sounds fantastic.
All right. So from page 115 of Wooden, A Lifetime of Observations, here is the John Wooden quote of the day. In all circumstances, whether as a coach, teacher, or business leader, you must begin by determining what is fair. That means you must eliminate prejudice or of all types. Can you do that 100%? Probably not. But you can try.
All right, let me give you a little background. I was born in 60, so I remember that's everybody ran the UCLA high post offense. Yep. with John Wooden, and he was there weren't as many games, hardly any games on TV, and I still remember being in about seventh or eighth grade, and we had a guy that kind of worked with us, and he brought four or five of us up to the state tournament in Champaign and Illinois, and we went to a dorm at the University of Illinois campus, and between games, and watched Bill Walton go 21 for 22. All right, but back to our Wooden quote of the day from page 115 here. All right. And John Wooden made things simple and made things understandable, and is a brilliant coach and more than just a coach. I love listening to Bill Walton talk about John Wooden. He loved John Wooden, and as you recall, those were the late 60s, early 70s. And yep. Bill had long hair and was basically a hippie. And Coach Wooden decided, Bill, we all love hair. You got great hair. You're not going to be playing for the Bruins with hair like that. And so Bill had to argue a little bit. And finally, Bill went and cut his hair, and he won some national championships. That was part of that great run when they had who they. I mean, they had Lou Alcindor.
Well, they went Alcindor. Well, he had the backcourt. In 64, 65, he had Gail Goodrich and Walt Hazzard. And that's when he did the 2-2-1. And then he got Alcindor. And then after that was Walton and Jamal, well, Keith Wilkes at the time. And that was kind of the run that he went on there.
That was quite a run right there. But no, without the prejudice, and the way that you say as a coach, the team leader, as a business person. And I think that, that's one of the things that Wooden did better than all of us is, I think as coaches, we have to figure out, what's important to help us win.
Yeah.
And I think that, he was a great philosopher, Coach Wooden, but bottom line is they were going to do things. I mean, his first thing he did, he would teach players how to tie their shoes as freshmen.
Yep.
And that was the first thing. Here's how you put your shoe on. Here's how you tie it. And he'd just build on it from there. And he didn't care. I don't think he liked long hair that much. But other than that, he wanted to get guys that would buy into what he wanted. And he didn't care what race, religion, etc. This is the way that UCLA basketball is played, and this is how we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. And I think you have to have. I worked for a guy at one point, and he had a great quote, and it was really something that stuck with me. You can win any battle that you want to win, but you can't win every battle. That's always this kind of stuck with me as when it comes to leadership, is you gotta pick and choose which battles you want to win. What music do you know? And we both have coached women or girls, So what music do you want to listen to? And I'd rather listen to REO Speedwagon or Duran Duran. But if they want to listen to Disney, then listen to Disney. I'm not going to fight that battle. Same thing when you're working with your administration. As Coach Meyer used to say, budget your bitches. When you're working with your administration, and different things like that. And I think that. You got to be smart about it. You got to be smart about what you do. And when you're talking about, eliminating that, your leadership style, you got to figure out what is fair. Sometimes you may not like what your administration says, but you realize that, probably that's fair. Even though I'm kind of hurt by that decision, I just got to roll with it, or whatever it may be. And that's what kind of hits home with me on that one, Coach. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I want to shift gears a little bit here.
Sure.
How did we get the name for the podcast?
I've told the story a couple of times. Long story short, it was, I'd set out of coaching for a year and was getting a little restless, but wasn't ready to come back into coaching. And we were walking back from the movie theater that was a few blocks from our house on a Sunday matinee. And my wife, I said, I was kind of saying, I want to do something, but I'm not sure. And she said, well, you liked the direct quote. From Carla Plum, you like to talk a lot. Why don't you? And you listen to podcasts all the time. Why don't you do a podcast? And I'm like, okay. And so, well, what do I know? Was it the only thing other than 80s pop culture trivia about the only thing I really know is basketball. And so did some research, looked at some things. And my dad was a marketing teacher. At the collegiate level, at a junior college level. And so he'd always talk, you learn by osmosis from your parents. And I knew it was important to have a good name. And, I was like, well, blah, 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 and napkin and a pen. And I'm not kidding you, Coach. I probably went 2 weeks trying to decide whether it was going to be a pen and a napkin or a napkin and a pen. And because I, you know, again, I knew how important of a decision, because once you name something, it's hard to rebrand it. And that's, you know, that's just where it kind of came from, is just coaches sitting around. I'm sure you went to the state tournament in Lincoln, Nebraska before, back in the yep. days where Barry's, in downtown Lincoln was a place where a lot of coaches hung out. That's what I remember. My first real major, a pen and a napkin experience was sitting there with it was myself, Mike, Jamie, Dr. Ken Rodas, and Gene Steinmeier. And so there's some names for you. And
oh yeah,
and I'm just a young 21, 22-year-old guy just sitting there. My mouth was shut for 3 hours straight, and Rhodey's grabbing napkins and writing stuff up, and Stein's grabbing napkins and writing stuff up, and yeah, that always just kind of stuck in my head, and that's where it came from.
Oh, that is so funny, and this world is so small, because Ken Rhodas, the gal I talked about who got the concussion, which cost us a national championship, we're playing at Hastings, and she's a freshman. Mm-hmm. And all she can do is play defense. And so we are up one or two, and I said, there's probably six, seven seconds left. And I said, this is a sign out of bounds. Your girl can't get the ball. Well, she ended up grabbing the girl's jersey. So it was an intentional foul.
Oh.
And we got beat that game. We got beat that game. And then Steinmeier, I've known him since his days in Crete, Nebraska, and at Doan College. And then he was in our league for quite a few years at Northwest Missouri State. And so those are all people that that I've known for a long time, and that is awesome. Now, the reason I ask what the name came from, I thought maybe it had a Rick Majerus foundation.
Yeah, I didn't want people to think it was a direct ripoff from that.
It's not.
You know, for folks that don't know, and if you don't know what the book is, you got to get it. Rick Majerus, it's My Life on a Napkin or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a great read. You got to check it out if you're any sort of coach. But yeah, that, you know, I think it was just kind of subliminally, you know, stuck in there. And yeah, that's the, you know, that's the first real night I remember. And we had qualified for the national tournament for the first time. And of course, Gene and Rhodey had been there quite a few times between them, and they were giving us advice, you know, do this, don't do this, think about that. We had the 9 o'clock in the morning game. And so we got up, and we were, you know, Coach Slifer had morning practice today. So we were talking about the good and the bad of the early morning practices. And I'm not a morning person, but we had to practice, you know, one of the things, and I can't remember who told us, but they were like, you need to practice early in the morning and get your body clock on that. So we practiced for like a week and a half straight at 6 a.m.
Yep.
And we played Brusha, Kentucky. And sorry, folks, if we're going down memory lane here, but you know, it's this is what we do sometimes on the podcast. We were going down, and we went into double overtime in the 9 a.m. game, and the organizers of the tournament were so mad at us because we set everything back like an hour for the entire first day of the tournament out there at in Indiana. And we didn't feel bad about it because we won, and then we played at 9 a.m. On Friday, and we won again, and then we ran into I think it was Western Oregon when they were really rolling, and they ended up winning the national championship. They were really, really good, and they ended up beating us in the Elite Eight. So yeah, that's those national tournament memories.
That Western Oregon, that was where that was where our tournament was for 4 years, and we got beat by them 1 year. And the greatest student chant ever, every time the opponent would shoot a free throw, the whole crowd would start yelling, "The whole gym is watching. The whole gym is watching." And so Freddie from Northern State beat him that year and won a national title. And the next year he came back with a T-shirt, "The whole gym watched. The whole gym watched."
Oh.
The reason I brought up Majerus was, I'm old enough that AAU wasn't around back then, but there was me and a buddy saw that there's a camp up in Chicago. I lived in downstate Illinois, Charleston, Illinois, and it was an old varsity camp, they called it, and there were 250 varsity guys there. And so being a young, dumb kid, I drove me and a few other buddies up, and we got there a little bit late. I will admit to it. It's a few minutes late, and we put our stuff in the dorm room, came out, and Rick Majerus ran the camp.
Oh, wow.
And Rick Majerus was 29 years old. He was the second assistant for Al McGuire and then Hank Raymond's at Marquette.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the craziest. I swear, we scrimmaged that night till 1:30 or 2 in the morning.
Wow.
And he kept saying, I don't want you guys to get in trouble in the dorm. So we get back in at 1:30 or 2, and apparently there had been a professional thief go through the whole dorm.
Oh, geez.
And I think I had a billfold with $60 or $70 in it, and I lost. I didn't have any money.
Oh, geez.
And I still had to get home. But unfortunately, my buddy had hidden his a little bit better, so he got home. But oh. Rick Majerus was a great teacher, a great coach. He was at Ball State.
Yep.
Then he was out of Utah.
Yep.
And
St. Louis was his last stop there. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay, I got to tell this story. He was a chunky guy.
Yeah, girthy.
And he was very girthy. And he always made fun of himself. And he was just a great communicator. And one of the things that he goes, "All right, I want to see the fastest kid in camp." And so it was actually a kid on my team, and he was a little guy, about 5'8 or 5'9, but it was extremely fast, extremely athletic. And he goes, "All right, you guys just think I'm a fat ASF, but I'm going to show you something. I get to say on your mark, get set, go, but we're going to go from the baseline on my go to the free throw line."
Okay.
So, okay, all right. There's no way, Rick, you're a big boy. This kid is really quick. And Rick didn't cheat. He just goes under mark, gets that go. And I don't know if Majerus beat him or not, but it was at least a tie. And it was amazing. I mean, we were all just going, "Oh, my gosh." And he goes, "Guys, I'm old. I'm tired. I've got a fat ASF." And he turned around and dropped his drawers and showed everybody his butt. And we're all laughing because it is funny because of the communicator he is. And all of a sudden we looked up, and there is a young college girl up watching this. And for the next 5 minutes, he totally lost the camp. We were all just on the floor laughing. Oh, and it was, that was back in 1977.
Oh,
what a great camp. It was the greatest basketball experience to that time that I've been up to. And so I was always a Majerus fan, and he's a motion guy. I'm a motion guy. And he's passed away since then, but he was the guy that lived in the hotel room all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. He had the hotel suite in Utah, and you know,
yep.
Yeah, it's what he did. A legend around here. He had a lot of connections with Omaha as well. Definitely one of the legends of the game, and gone far too soon, without a doubt.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. A buddy of mine from Cardinal Stritch 1 year goes, "Hey, you want to come up and work camp? Majerus is going to be there." I said, "Absolutely." Well, I get up there and he goes, I've got some bad news. He Majerus had been overseas and he goes, he's having a heart procedure and so he's not going to be there. So that was disappointing because I wanted to reacquaint. And I did see him one other time. I go, hey, I don't know if you'll remember this, but it's 1977. You beat a kid in the race and you dropped your drawers. And he just goes, shut up. I don't ever want to hear about that again. I mean, a guy like that now, it'd be on TikTok, it'd be on Instagram, it'd, somebody would have her phone out. And, it was just a different time.
Coaches, you know just as well as I do that we're always looking for new and different ways to motivate our players and programs. But sometimes it's hard to find that perfect source that we're looking for. Over the past 25 years, I've collected hundreds of handouts to help motivate my players and programs. And now I'd like to share some of my favorites with you. The A Pen and a Napkin 101 Best Handouts booklet is now available for you, to you for only $15. In this booklet, you'll find motivational material for all types of situations and individuals to help you communicate your values to your players and program. For ordering information, you can either DM me on Twitter or email me at apenandanapkin@gmail.com for details. Want to know more about A Pen and a Napkin and all the resources it offers? Go to apenandanapkin.com, a great resource for any coach at any level. In addition to our A Pen and a Napkin University video library options that are available to order, we have hundreds of pages of notes, from one-page handouts to book breakdowns to original coaching notes. We also have coaching links, a full catalog of every A Pen and a Napkin podcast, and ways to contribute to the growth of A Pen and a Napkin. apenandanapkin.com is a coaching resource that will help you become a better coach. Well, Coach, let's talk a little bit about your philosophy, some of the stuff that you like to do there at Central Missouri. You want to talk offense or defense first, Dave?
Let's go offense first because my defensive numbers have been very poor lately. So I'm still struggling with that. But offensively, our base offense is a four-out motion, and we've got a lot of different reads. We've got a few rules, and the thing about motion is it doesn't get any good till late January, February. And so we do have a few sets, and we've got some ball screen stuff we do. But I love motion, and the first clinic I ever went to was a Bob Knight clinic. He was the king back then. Anybody that teaches motion teaches it differently. And every year it's different because of your personnel. And so that's why I really like the adaptability of it. And I like a lot of things with it. Now the game's changed and we've gone to more ball screens. So we've had to put in some continuities with some ball screens. But I like to, during practice, teach our kids how to play, and during games, let them play. And that's our philosophy, and we've been very, very good offensively throughout the years. And even though we're struggling a little bit this year, we're still, you know, 85th percentile in synergy, points per possession. And I do love analytics. I like to find ways to figure out, you know, what's our best bet here? What gives us the best chance to win? And I had a company for the last 4 or 5 years, Pivot Analysis, and it was a couple guys from Spain. And on an NCAA box now, they have a plus minus. So whenever you're in a game, and those are somewhat deceiving, a single game really doesn't mean all that much, but as the year goes on, you know, pretty soon you've got to figure out, well, gosh, you know, this kid can't shoot a left-hand layup, but how come we're so much better whenever she's in the game? And it kind of quantifies some of the data that, that all of us as coaches have used throughout the years. Well, the reason you're playing is because you can do this and do that. And anytime that you can get some numbers to back up what you're saying, it does make a difference. And I am a big guy that I love the three, but I love paint touches whether it's a post-up opportunity or whether it's dribble penetration. And I think I've gotten a little carried away this year. You guys are fortunate. You're close now to Drake men's basketball, where Ben McCollum's at. He was at Northwest Missouri State, and they've got four transfers from Northwest Missouri State. I think they're still undefeated, aren't they?
The last time I saw, they are. I'll take a look. You go ahead and keep talking. I'll take a look.
Okay. Well, and one of his deals is that he runs the shot clock down. And this whole thing started at Northwest. He'd done all right for 4 or 5 years, but nothing great. And he had this little point guard from Kansas City, and the kid was only about 5'9". And the kid, Justin Pitts is his name. And the kid averaged 20 points a game for his last couple of years. And that's when they got good and started winning national championships. But the odd thing about the way they played was, you think with a small point guard that you'd want to get out in some open space and fast break and take advantage of his quickness. And it was just the opposite. They had to have the lowest fast break percentage in all of Division II basketball. And this guard would catch, I'd say, an average of 6 to 8 ball screens a possession. And he had some big 6'8" kids that spotted up on the 3-point line, and either Pitts would make a shot, and he had kind of a 15-foot runner or 12-foot runner, which appeared odd, but if they ended up double teaming him, he would find one of those 6'8" guys, and they'd knock down threes. It was, the numbers were just astounding. And then he had some other players and played a little bit differently, but bottom line is they use the shot clock so well and frustrate the other team that they don't have a lot of possessions in a game. And I got a little carried away earlier in the year after watching his teams. I go, guys, we need to run the shot clock down some. But I think in the last three games we probably had five shot clock violations. So I think I'm ready to get back to be a little up tempo and get some better percentage shots. I coach a little differently than some.
They are still undefeated. They are 8-0. They have the aforementioned St. Ambrose Bees coming into the Knapp Center tonight. So set your DVR. Coach, what are you, what are two or three, you said paint touches. What are two or three other things that you've really emphasized with your motion game to be as efficient as you have been?
Well, in years past, one of the best things we've done is whenever we do get a post touch, we have something for the other four players to do. Now, it's not a rule, it's just general guidelines. And so we've always got somebody diving from the opposite seam area, and then the corner person that's away from the post is coming up to the seam area. And then whoever throws it in the post is trying to screen for the other perimeter player so we can get open. And this all comes back from Rick Majerus' days of the post players are, they're trying to score there, but they can always kick it out. And that was before the three that I was playing. And we morphed it into using more three-point shots. And then one of the greatest things he always did, he called it gaining ground. And so anytime a post player threw it back outside, they had to gain ground into the defender so they could get a pass back and an easy put-back shot.
Yeah, kick it back out, but then reseal and drive them down even deeper.
And some years we're really, really good at that. And for some reason, somebody's done a poor job of teaching it this year. That means me, and we're not as good, but we will get good at that.
What about your defensive philosophy, Dave? What do you like to do there?
Well, okay, I've messed around with this some for the longest time. We were Dick Bennett on the line, up the line, where you force a ball to the corner, you front the post. And I tell you what, those were the easy, great days, because if you could get a team to play hard, it was basically simple. And you just had to have ball pressure. And if there was ever any problems, all you'd have to say was, hey, that ball pressure is a subtle thing. You need more ball pressure out there. So he always had that coach's answer to every little problem right there. Yeah. And I think that teams, well, a couple of things. We had some rule changes where, I mean, back when I was at Missouri Western, Division II days, our supervisor official was, he did both the men and the women, and he could care less about the women's game. So it was called just the same as the men. We could use two forearms and no problem. Well, right now, you know, you get one hot stove touch and all of a sudden it's a foul. Anytime you put two hands on, it's a foul. More than one hot stove touch, it's a foul. And the guarding dribble penetration is the hardest thing to do defensively right now. Guarding dribble penetration. And I think that's one of the rule changes that have made the game tougher to defend right now.
So you guys doing a lot more closeouts then with that? You know, how are you teaching?
Well, we've probably 10 years ago, we kind of 15 years ago, we kind of went with the pack for quite a while. And that, I still remember going up to a clinic in Wisconsin, and this was back in the on the line, up the line days, Dick Bennett's talking. I can't wait to come up there. And that was back when Terry Porter, who had played for him at UW-Stevens Point, was
sure.
playing in the NBA.
Yep.
Trailblazers. Yeah.
Yep.
Division III school, and he's got an NBA player. And I still remember going to that. I go, gosh, I bet I learned so much about on the line, up the line. Well, that was when he had gone to a lot of NBA practices, and so he changed it to the pack. And the pack is you know, you're trying to not give them the baseline now. You're trying to force them to the middle, and the post defense was different. And so we did a lot of that. And again, for a few years there, I was a Pitino pressing. That was back when he was in Kentucky, about pressing, three-point shooting, getting a million possessions, trying to wear people out. That was back when Loyola Marymount was scoring, you know, whatever it was, 110 a game or whatever. And so last year I get the bright idea. I seen a couple videos with Houston men's basketball defense with Calvin Sexton. And so I tried, and I tried. We were picked to win the league last year. We ended up 21-8. It was a disappointing year. We were running some Houston men's defense stuff. I forgot about this, but that was when I was at Mount Mercy. We were a great pressing team. I still remember meeting at the Applebee's with your guy Mike, and we'd both gone Division II, and neither one of us were having success as to why aren't we having success with pressing. And we're sitting around and having an appetizer and possibly a nice cold one, trying to figure out why you can't press in Division II, or why we couldn't press. And the only thing we could ever figure out was, in the NAIA days, we would play a lot of bad teams.
Yeah.
Okay. There were some teams that weren't near as good. And I'm telling you, you can get a lot of confidence when you play enough bad teams.
Yep.
And all of a sudden you can make things happen and you can make it happen then against good teams. But in our leagues, we were just like, gosh, there's just not the easy games that we had that we got the confidence. And so, now, that's been proven. Ashland, they pressed 40 minutes a game and won 73 in a row. So, but at that time, and it's been 28, 29 years ago, that was just a great conversation between Mike Powers and a couple other guys were there too, and we just couldn't quite figure out how come we couldn't do it in Division II like we could in NAIA.
Mm-hmm.
I keep telling too many stories here. I can't remember where that, I don't know where that story came from, but we had another direction we were going there.
We were talking defense up the line, on the line. You were saying it was hard to close out. And yeah, the hardest thing to guard is the ball and dribble penetration right now.
All right. So we got beat last year before Christmas in a game at home. We were up 20 with a minute left in the third quarter.
Wow.
We ended up losing that game. I was very frustrated. We have in Division II, we have what's called life in the balance. So you've got a mandatory week off during Christmas. And we've had that for about 15, 18 years. And I still remember I was the one guy that was complaining about it the whole time. I didn't want to do it. And I still remember the first time we did it. The second day, I'm going, this is the greatest thing that Division II has ever, ever done. Wow. There are people out there that are a lot smarter than me. And I still think it's a great thing because nobody can feel guilty. Hey, it's usually right before conference season really kicks in. Everybody gets to go home, recharge, get reconnected with your family, come back, ready to go. You by a week. Those kids are ready to come back. They've had enough of all the family time. And so we had a week off. And so my wife and I flew down to Houston, and I ended up getting a hold of a guy that my old AD at Missouri Western left and went to North Alabama and was this guy's AD. And so he kind of knew me, and he was, he's not even an assistant coach, but one of the guys, probably director of operations.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he got us into a couple practices, and I'm going to tell you what, it was eye-opening. it was eye-opening. Calvin is an intense dude. And this guy, the first 30 minutes of practice, I'm going, oh, my gosh, he is on a roll today. And so I started talking to the director of operations. He goes, no, this is every day. This is nothing. And it was intense. He had a great rapport with his point guard, and his point guard ran things. I'm trying to come up with that name again. The point guard, he ended up getting... Raining his ankle in the first half
Shed?
Of the semifinal game.
I want to say Shed, but I know that's not right.
Jamal said.
Yeah.
Jamal, what a wonderful leader, wonderful kid, hard-nosed player. He didn't rip Shed very much, but boy, everybody else in the program, he was unmerciful. And those guys played hard for him. And I don't know that I've seen a team play quite as hard as they do. They're tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, that didn't learn enough to make us a great defensive team. Okay. I will admit to it right now. I needed a little more work on it. I've gotten away from it. So we're kind of doing some different things right now. And we are still trying to get a little zone in, and knowing that at times some teams don't attack zones very well. So let's make sure we work on it enough that we were able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Coach Dave Slifer, it has just been awesome having you on, Coach. If folks want to reach out to you, want to know more, how can they get a hold of you?
Yep, that's D Slifer, Slifer, at ucmo.edu. For you D2 people out there, go to Instagram and follow the D2 Savant, and you'll have some good D2 information there in women's basketball. And if nothing else, you'll get the game of the day in D2 for my son DJ. So love what I'm doing. I'm 64 years old. I don't know how many years more I'm going to go. I still do enjoy it, and enjoy the highs and enjoy the lows.
Yeah. Well, I hope today in your first appearance on a Pen and a Napkin podcast, that was a high and not a low.
It was definitely a high. I was a little bit leery going into this. And Marty, you do a great job. You make people feel comfortable. You're kind of the Johnny Carson of the podcast. Yeah.
Johnny Carson just rolled over in his grave a little bit after that. So, but I appreciate the praise. Thank you very much. Dave, thanks so much for coming on here. If you hold the line just a second, let me wrap up things. Dave Seifer, head women's basketball coach at Central Missouri State, just a tremendous, tremendous basketball coach. Like I said, wherever he goes, winning follows. We want to thank our founding sponsor, Cosac Chiropractic. Follow us on Twitter at a pen and a napkin. Download, like I said, download, rate, review, subscribe to the pod if you're listening. Everything helps to move us up in the rankings. Questions, comments, suggestions, or ideas, email me, apenandanapkin@gmail.com. I want to thank again Dave Seifer for his time here today. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.